Welcome to Conscious Voices, a weekly program dedicated to bringing you alternative points of view into challenging popular assumptions in order to help you be better informed and civically engaged. I'm Evan Davis, your host for this edition, with Rob Ebright from WCRS. Anyone who has been in Columbus long enough to remember when the City Council mandated community access TV station used to carry the Columbus School Board meetings live remembers how colorful the public comment portions could be. In particular, there were two persistent critics, in whose view the school board could never do anything right, who would use their allotted 60 seconds, and then some, every week to accuse board members of corruption and incompetence, misallocations of funds, you name it. And they had a champion on the school board, board member Bill Moss, who sometimes played the role of whistleblower. He was renowned for his long-winded speechifyings and verbal bombastics, and he sometimes had a valid point and at other times, in my view, was way off base, like when he would attack fellow school board member Mary Jo Kilroy of racism. Moss even removed a shoe and used it to gavel the table at one point during a board meeting, a stunt he later told me he had planned in advance and was therefore sure to wear slip-on shoes for the occasion. He opposed a proposed policy that would have extended anti-discrimination protections to students on the basis of sexual orientation, and the audience, at least his audience, ate it up. And it was a while before that policy was passed. Similar protests have greeted non-discrimination and inclusion proposals in other cities, and that particular issue really came to a head nationally over the pivotal detail of gendered bathroom facilities. On that point, Bill Moss would have been in league with the infamous Carolina Senator Jesse Helms, or many of today's anti-equality protesters. But today the dynamic has changed somewhat. Same-sex marriage is now the law of the land, and gay pride activists are bolder and more numerous. Liberal legislators who once were tepid on the topic now find it advantageous to embrace GLBT rights and to take stands on a number of progressive policies related to diversity and inclusion, separation of church and state, and even revisiting history to correct historical misrepresentations. Last year, the city of Columbus, Ohio, removed their iconic statue of fabled conquistador, rapist, and genocidal megalomaniac Christopher Columbus. This week, Mexico announced plans to dispatch its Columbus statue and replace it with a monument to indigenous women. Nationally, there's a move to replace Columbus Day with an Indigenous Peoples Day, and we've discussed Columbus and his heinous crimes many times in great detail on this program, but suffice it to say that I have never found any historic accounts of him having done anything good or redeeming, and an abundance of evidence that his net influence was accompanied by horrific bloodshed, tyranny, torture, incompetence, and debauchery. Yet there are some, especially in the Italian community, who see him as some kind of a cultural hero, even though he was employed not by Italy but by Spain. School boards, which have proposed to replace the name of the holiday, have come under fire from angry parents and members of the public. By and large, these are the same parents who are vehemently opposed to teaching critical race theory, an academic lens that examines patterns of systemic racism in law and its effects on society throughout history. Never mind that critical race theory is an advanced academic discipline not taught at the grade school level, but realities of little relevance to these protesters who are convinced that CRT teaches self-loathing for white people and causes social division. They claim that racism is rare or antiquated, and they would prefer to sweep it, along with GLBT rights, women's equality, criticism of the Confederacy, and even the whole 14th Amendment, under the proverbial rug. And so, with their metaphoric brooms held aloft like pitchforks, they descend on school board meetings across the country, where they proceed to shout and interrupt and hurl threats at board members, in some cases even harassing them at their homes in menacing ways, the very definition of terrorism. Add to that vocal opposition to mask mandates and other public health protocols some school boards are adopting during the pandemic. Governors like our own Mike DeWine are leaving the boards vulnerable to these attacks by passing the buck and refusing to adopt statewide pandemic policies, leaving it up to the school boards, cities, county boards of health to issue such mandates. Meanwhile, allies of the protesters in the state legislatures are proposing statewide laws of their own that would prohibit cities, school districts, and counties, and even employers from adopting and enforcing these mandates. And they're acting in a very concerted way. These are not just random, emboldened white supremacists, religious extremists, cultural nationalists, and other Trump supporters showing up spontaneously Whole organizations are orchestrating their movements in some cases, issuing calls to action, and even chartering buses in one instance to pack the board meetings and get their way by making government ungovernable. Recently, there was a counter-protest in Worthington in support of a diversity and inclusion policy that the Worthington School Board proposed. That board had seen several meetings disrupted by the provincial pitchforkers, but rather than confront the mob directly, organizers of the Worthington counter-protest decided to hold their own separately scheduled event. WCRS's Rob Ebright was there and gathered the following audio.
District. And so we're going to start today with a couple speakers. Maria Ramirez is our first speaker. She is a 19-year Worthington resident, a Worthington Schools parent, a member of the Worthington Community Relations Commission, and part of Worthington Racial Justice Organizing, or WRJO, as I will refer to it for the rest of the day, crew, I guess. So here's Maria.
Thank you, Glennon. Thanks, everybody, for coming out today. We are living in some challenging times right now, and recently the Worthington community has been hit hard by some ugliness and hate visible in our community, from seeing anti-Semitic symbols at our school board meeting to the hate and the types of threats that our school board members have been receiving recently. And these are things that do not represent, I think, the true values of Worthington. And so this event is an opportunity to focus on the good. And so because I want to focus on the good, I want to highlight just briefly a few of the good things that are happening in Worthington right now, or that have happened in Worthington, that support our diversity. And so the first thing I want to highlight is the good work that has happened in our school district. You know, when the school district last year passed, stated, you know, their clear desire to be an anti-racist district, they didn't stop at just a symbolic gesture. They actually started to work and push forward on real actions to help increase and improve our district's diversity. And so the things that I find really, really valuable are, for like, one, the hiring of a brand new position, right? The Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. This was not a position that existed before in Worthington, but it's there now. And like many of the people here, I'm sure, have been following, right now our district is working on defining a clear diversity, equity, and inclusion policy for our schools. And again, I really celebrate that. I think that's wonderful. There are good things that have happened in our city too. So I want to look back a couple of years ago, actually 3 years ago, in 2019, our city council passed a non-discrimination ordinance in Worthington. And this ordinance increased the definition of protected individuals in Worthington to include folks who have different sexual orientation, gender, or identity. And I celebrate that our LGBTQ plus friends, neighbors, and family members are being protected in Worthington. And this year, in 2021, there was an expansion of that non-discrimination ordinance to include the category for housing discrimination. So this year, they passed a source of income discrimination protection that was added on. And this protects predominantly, it's actually a really large group of people, but it includes people with disabilities, often women, and people of color. And what this means is that people whose income comes from sources other than just traditional wages can have access to housing without fear of being discriminated against because of the source of their income. And again, this is something that I think we need to celebrate in Worthington. And the first thing I want to highlight today has to do with an effort in our community to create a vision for the future. There was a visioning committee that worked for 18 months to gather information from our community. And the goal was to find out what people in this community envision for the future of Worthington. And one of the visions that they came up with, out of seven, was of Worthington as a diverse and equitable community. And that's the vision that I think we all can stand behind. So all of these things I see as progress, but we all know that there's still a long way to go to meet that vision. And so today, I want to encourage everybody to remember that together, by working together, we can work to push for change. And one of the most important tools we have to do this is our ability to vote. And so Worthington has a great record of showing up for presidential elections, but we don't do quite as well when it comes to off years like this one. And so today, I want to encourage everybody to please, if you value diversity, if you value the issues of equity, do your research about the candidates and show up and vote. Because it's going to take all of us to help push this work forward. And so today, we actually have a voter registration volunteer in the back. Celeste, can you wave your hand? Right back there. And so if anybody here would like to register to vote, you can do so today. If anybody here needs to update your voter registration information because your name changed or you moved, you can do that here today. Now, all those things have to be done by October 4th, tomorrow. And then I want to encourage everybody to also remember that early voting kicks off this week, October 5th. And so it's very convenient to us at the Franklin County Board of Elections at 1700 Morse Road. You can go early and vote. And so I ask all of you to celebrate diversity by working to protect diversity, to work for equity, to work for justice. And that means showing up, doing your research, and voting for the candidates that support those values. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maria. What a great message. We should all. The next speaker we have is Kiara Yakita. She is founder of Black Lives Liberation Movement of Central Ohio, a frontline activist, artist, and human resources professional with a focus on DEI work.
Thanks for having me. This is like my fourth or fifth time speaking at an event in Worthington. And I must say, I kind of wish that Worthington would support these initiatives as they do the farmers market that blocks the traffic every Saturday. We need that crowd here because clearly Worthington still has so much to learn. Education is liberation, and that is exactly why it is under attack in this city. I need you to listen to me when I say that education is liberation that will free you from the brainwashing, from the lies, from the whitewashing, from the things that make people not want to understand, deal with, or value people who don't look like them. Yeah. You know, I drive around Worthington, I live out here, I see the Black Lives Matter signs, but I'm like, but do they really? And the way that we can show that Black Lives Matter is more than a t-shirt and a yard sign and a bumper sticker is to continue to fight for them. And when I say fight, I don't mean, thank you. I don't mean just marching through the streets. I stopped marching through the streets months ago. It's exhausting. Our knees have mileage on them now. We can't do this forever. But there are other ways to do this. We are all now engaged in the struggle together, despite the fact that we don't look alike. We need the struggle, we need the schools, we need the institutions to be just as diverse as this crowd that's looking back at me right now. They don't want the schools to teach the truth about this country's history. They don't want the youth to understand what's at stake and what we are trying to create here. They want everybody to think that everything is fine, racism is over, because we marched for a year in 2020. It is very much not over. So with that being said, welcome to the struggle. This is a multi-generational, heterogeneous battle that we are in. And as long as there are people who are going to oppose what we are doing, we need to fight harder and keep coming back for more. Because this neighborhood as you know, is not as diverse as it could be. But as that diversity starts to come into the neighborhood, I need you to make sure to treat that diversity in the way that your yard sign says that you will. You know, it's strange after everything that happened last year, going into jobs with interviews that said, we want diversity. We want people of color. We want different perspectives. But then when you implant that diversity into these environments, they are still subject to alienation. And that tells me that there is still much work to do. There are still more things to be done. There is still more to be learned. So I'm going to send you all home with some homework today. I challenge you, don't think that just attending these events covers it all. Don't think that just us kumbayaing together on a Sunday is going to solve the problem. I want you to be uncomfortable. Read a book, read something that teaches you something other than what you read on a social media post about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Get uncomfortable, learn something new, challenge yourself, and push yourself. We are past that point of that momentum that we had in 2020, so now it's our job individually to keep that movement and keep that flow going. So I implore you all to keep learning, keep studying, and keep applying that new knowledge. Keep asking questions and do not give up against the opposition. The acts that we saw at that school board meeting, the salutes, the hate, the symbolism, that's fear. It's not as simple as hate. It's not as simple as evil. That is fear. Because those people are afraid that with these new initiatives in this city, they are going to lose their position of being the only ones, the dominant ones, the powerful ones. So when they challenge you, you challenge back. And if you aren't upsetting your local racist, then you are not doing your job. If they don't drive by and rev their engines to try to drown you out, if they don't show up at the school board meetings ready to battle you, you are not doing your job. We did our job. We have been marching and fighting for these things. Our ancestors have been marching and fighting for these things. But we still need the individual to take action. When you're in an environment and you notice that they're not treating people equally, stand up and speak out about it. Don't be passive. Because as I always made the crowd say during our marches, white silence equals violence. And that still very much applies to this day. So, with that all being said, I super appreciate that you all are here and you're wanting to fight the discrimination and hate that is going on in this city. And I know that sometimes it can feel like it's an impossible battle. The struggle will never end. But you need to realize they are the minority. They are the few. The hit dog barks louder than the happy one. They are going to make more noise out of a way to try to intimidate you and make it feel as if everyone thinks what they think. But understand that us, the ones who love, who have integrity, compassion, empathy, and understanding, we are going to be the ruling class pretty soon here. But our rule will not be through hate. So I thank you all for coming out. Thank you for keeping up the fight, and understand that we are all going to overcome everything that we are going through as long as we keep working hard. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. And I just want to also everyone give a thanks to Kelly, who is interpreting here for us. And also remind, she says that I'm not talking too fast, but I'm trying to talk slower than I normally do. So I believe up next we have Rebecca Billingsley. Rebecca is a Worthington Schools parent since 2005, a WRJO member, and one of the administrators of the Facebook group Courageous Community from Dialogue to Action. Where is she? Oh, wait. Never mind. Rebecca's not going to go because she's being interviewed right now. I didn't notice that. So, Kyle, you're up. Kyle Strickland is a Worthington Schools alum. He is an attorney who works on race and legal policy at the Kerwin Institute
for the study of race and ethnicity and the Roosevelt Institute. Notice I pulled Kerwin first.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody, thanks so much, Glennon. It is good to see everybody here today. To see this crowd, it brings back memories of Worthington. So I live in Columbus downtown now. I'm a resident of Worthington, and I went to Worthington City Schools. And it was in February of 2020 when I was invited back to speak to Worthington Kilborn as part of their Black History Month assembly. So February 2020, keep in mind before the pandemic, before George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, so much that was happening. But the reason that I was invited is because a couple of students, Sasha and Sasha, they're two Sashas, they reached out to me and they said, you know, oftentimes Worthington does these Black History Month assemblies and we kind of talk about celebratory figures, but we don't really talk about real issues. And so we want to do something where we actually confront this history in which we're talking about why we celebrate Black History Month and why talking about racial justice is important. So I go and I speak to the students at this assembly. It was a school-wide assembly to talk about these issues around Black history, but also making clear that Black history is American history. And what's important about this is this. After I spoke, I got some letters from students, a lot of them positive, but many of them also negative. Some of the students would send me a letter and they would say something of the likes of, well, slavery ended so long ago and discrimination ended so long ago, and I know people who are just as successful as so-and-so over here and they're perfectly fine. So why are we still blaming issues on things that happened so long ago? And they said, you know, honestly, I have a friend's cousin who is doing really well for himself. And if we just blame people or we just blame the problems on everything else, then that's a victim mindset. That's a victim mindset. We should be able to give them the space to do whatever they want to do and know that everything is equal because it wasn't as bad as it used to be. So that was telling because it makes very clear what we are not teaching in our schools. Knowing that right now, we like to tell these things as they are ancient history that have no impact on where we are today. We ignore pervasive effects of discrimination. We ignore this history and the present day impacts. And the worst of all is that at the end of some of these letters, there was one in particular said, I just wish we would go back to our old Black History Month assemblies where they would do dances and music. So, when the time comes for these future assemblies, we are not going to just do dances and music. We are going to talk about the issues because right now, in school districts all across the country, we are seeing an attack on diversity, on honesty in education, and we must fight back against that. Every single one of you out here today knows and understands that this attack is not in good faith. It's disingenuous, and it is designed to uphold a system of white supremacy that has excluded us for far too long, and we will not allow it. There's this idea that somehow talking about the issues of race and racism is divisive. And they say, let's not talk about race. Let's not talk about racism, because that's divisive. That makes people uncomfortable. Well, the fact is, it is well past time to be uncomfortable because we have become too comfortable with injustice and inequality in this city and in this country. We have to do better. And the question is, so what do we do now? What do we do now? With attacks all across the country, right in our city, about these issues around racism and white supremacy. So what do we do? There's a lot of people who say that these issues are too complex, they're too challenging to address, and as a result, there's only so much that I can do as one person. And you're right, there is only so much that we can do as individuals. But there is a lot we can do as individuals and a lot more that we can do together. And one part of this is, one, of course, raising awareness. That's important. But at the end of the day, we also have to be attacking the systems and structures that continue to leave us behind. We cannot allow for that to stand, and we have to call that out. There are people who want you to not mention race or racism or sexism or any of the other systems of exclusion because it's divisive. But we cannot stand any longer and allow this to be the case. And that's why we all have to actually take that call of action to move forward beyond the old system. Because we, for the past 50 years, have been living in a society that says colorblindness is the way towards equality. That says that if you just give everybody an even playing field, then everything else will pan out and the rest will go along with it. But we know that isn't true, because when we ignore the differences, when we ignore the disparities, we ignore the lived experiences of every single person in here. And we have to celebrate that. And so as I close, and with my other colleagues who are gonna be speaking about these issues, I really want you to think about this. It's not enough to just say, I support racial justice. You have to understand that that is a lens by which you do everything in your life, but also with your community. It means supporting the types of policies that address the wealth disparities, that address the attacks on democracy that we are seeing right now, right today. You have candidates who are running statewide, who are calling people all sorts of names, who are criticizing the daughter and son of Martin Luther King Jr., who are trying to weaponize his words about having a dream, about investing and believing in people because of the content of their character. These are the very same people who would have hated Dr. King back then, and they are bringing it here today. So the same people who are yelling about little black children to go and integrating schools are now the parents and grandparents who are arguing about talking about these issues in schools. That ain't right. So we will not stay silent. We will keep pushing and fighting, but you also have to support the candidates and the people who are on the front lines, who are calling these issues out. It is unacceptable, but we will continue the fight because we believe in equity and justice for all people, and that means recognizing all of our differences and celebrating those. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Kyle. You know, Kyle and Kara both pointed this out. We need to support candidates because we need policies. We got the, how do we get here, right? Policies, right? The Homeowners Loan Corporation, residential security or redlining map, the use of restrictive covenants, how we built our highways, who benefited. Those redlining maps look, places like Upper Arlington were greenlined and Worthington was blue lined. We got access to federal mortgage insurance. Places like Hanford Village did not, which is a historically black suburb in central Ohio. So up next we have Rebecca Billingsley, and I'll do this over again since you weren't here when I introduced you the first time, Rebecca. That's all right. Rebecca is a Worthington School parent since 2005, a WRJO member, and one of the administrators of the Facebook group Courageous Community From Dialogue to Action. Hello. I apologize, I wasn't here earlier. I was meeting with a gentleman from WTV. Anyway, hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming. I'm going to kind of piggyback on what Kyle has already said, and what he said is very important. I'm so glad I can segue. That was awesome. I wanted to speak to the Nazi salute and the anti-CRT, anti-DEI energy, I'm going to call it an energy, that we have in our community right now. So as Glennon said, I've been in this district since 2005. My oldest daughter went through K through 12, Worthington Schools, graduated from Worthington Kilbourne 2018. My youngest daughter, K through 12, or K through 10, she's in 10th grade now, Worthington Kilbourne, but started off in kindergarten in Worthington Schools as well. And I am involved with PTA. I sit on the Curriculum Liaison Council in the school district. Both of my children have played sports in the school district. So I'm a pretty involved parent, okay? When I started here, felt very welcomed and all that. This energy that's now in our district has changed tremendously, and the Nazi salute really took me aback. So, having said that, I'm going to talk about this energy because we like to look at this energy as compartmentalized and it's one incident,
But I'm going to give you a timeline similar to what Kyle mentioned to give you an idea of how long we've been dealing with this exact energy since slavery ended. So, you know, we tried Reconstruction. The 39th Congress of the United States, Thaddeus Stevens, who led that Congress, really attempted to create a new America that was sabotaged by the former Confederate states, okay? Which introduced black codes, which introduced Jim Crow that lasted for 100 years, which introduced the Red Summer of 1919 after World War I, which introduced Tulsa burning, Tulsa, the race riot of 1921. That's not the only black city that burned, by the way. That's one of several. And then we also have 4,000, at least 4,000 black men who were lynched during this time. And we also had Billie Holiday, if you remember the song Strange Fruit, Harry Anslinger pursued her because she kept singing the song. If you don't know that song, I ask that you look it up. Truman, President Truman, desegregated the military in 1949 because of Isaac Woodard, who was a vet who returned from World War II, having been honorably discharged, was beaten so badly that he was blinded. Okay? The same energy with Brown versus Board of Education that created the private schools and the Christian schools, because we're still going to separate our children. The same energy that threatened Ruby Bridges and the Little Rock Nine as they tried to integrate schools, you know, they threatened to kill these children, okay? The same energy that hated Martin Luther King when he was alive, but now we want to quote him, as Kyle said. You know, J. Edgar Hoover used his counterintelligence program to target civil rights leaders and anti-war protesters. That's well documented. The Civil Rights Act of 1994 brought on the Nixon presidency because the same energy was really upset with all the rioting and everything that occurred with the civil rights movement. The same energy that Reagan used to allow the Contras of Nicaragua to smuggle cocaine and bring in cocaine that ended up in the black communities, okay? And then we started with Trayvon Martin and BLM, you know, the movement, because my black life matters. Okay? And now we're at DEI, and anti-CRT. And now they are arguing about that. They don't want to be taught because my children are going to feel bad. Okay? Let me explain something. I learned at the age of 5 that I was not going to be liked by some white people simply because I was black. I didn't even understand what my parents were trying to tell me. Okay? But they had to tell me because I had to learn to navigate in this country. So children are resilient. Children will be okay. This generation that's currently present, that's currently in school, they want to know the truth. They're tired of the lies. The issue is the adults who don't want to hear it because they don't want to believe that this is what's happened. But I just gave you a timeline of this energy that keeps rearing its ugly head in this country, okay? This is the energy that wants to believe that George Washington's teeth were made by cherry wood instead of the teeth of former slaves. This is the energy that wants to romanticize Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings and their relationship, but she was a slave. She had no choice, okay? The lost cause of the Confederacy, that whole mindset, that's that energy as well. And we need to stop teaching that also. Not to mention the Trail of Tears, the Chinese Exclusion Act, the Japanese internment camps, the Mexican-Americans who were forced in and out of this country, deported in the 1920s, as well as Islamophobia, okay? Just to name a few. Now, regarding the Nazi salute, just know to that parent who made that salute, Hitler used our racism to create Nazi Germany. And he said we didn't go far enough. And you know what happened over there. So if you're saluting that, then you're not an American, okay? And you need to actually leave, quite honestly. Right. I believe that. It is time to teach the truth. And I don't stand here having been told that my ancestors were slaves as a victim. I stand here as my ancestors' prayers answered. And my ancestors are with me right now as I stand here to talk to all of you. As an American, you want me to pledge an allegiance, but you're mad at Colin Kaepernick when he kneels. But you expect me to pledge while you want me to be silent. This is my America as much as is anybody else's, and my truth needs to be told along with everyone else's. So we hope that that energy in this country decides to come and join us instead of fighting against us. Because we're here waiting for you to try to make America better. Because we need to do something different. It's time. Thank you.
Did anyone else see the eagle fly overhead? Was I the only one? Because that was so cool. And thank you so much. Wonderful talk, Rebecca. Also, I just saw that like at the last moment and it totally stole my attention because I have ADD. But policy matters, right? Policy matters a lot. And so do the school board members that are here today. I teach at Ohio State and I teach a class called Reading the City Through History and Law. It's planning history, city planning history. I also give a guest lecture in a variety of departments about the making of metropolitan inequality. I am sick of being the first time kids learn this history. We need to teach our kids this in the curriculum. And it can't be just our teachers inviting me or Kyle to come in and speak, which we've both done on numerous occasions, which is great, but our teachers need to be able to teach this too. And now we're gonna have some music, folks. Oh, I'm too foggy. Hang on. Sorry. It's the humidity, guys. Tayshia Thomas is a local musician, a Worthington resident, and co-founder of Say It Loud Columbus. She's going to play a couple tunes for us, and if you feel inclined, her cash apps are hashtag Tayshia and hashtag Say It Loud 614. Did I do that right? I'm not good at those things. So here she goes.
Thank you. My grandkids are also students in Worthington schools, and I would like to see their education more complete and full. You guys probably know this, so feel free to sing this one along with me. The doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper, yeah. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up, take what's theirs. Yeah, don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Oh, it's finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. I said, finally, the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Oh, while they're standing in the welfare line, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution, oh, talking about a revolution, oh, no, talking about a revolution, oh, no. Thank you. The next song I wrote is called When. You can find it on Bandcamp and iTunes and such. I was
I was questioning the fact that my grandmother was around during the Montgomery boycotts and the civil rights movement, and they were singing "We Shall Overcome," and I'm singing "We Shall Overcome" in the 2000s, and the question becomes when, because if it's not us, then who? And if it's not now, then when? So the song is called "When." When will we overcome? We've been getting ready for this train. Said it was coming. Trying to keep playing alone to get on board. We weren't worried about no baggage. Figured a ticket wouldn't do. And here we are looking around, still trying to see it through. Listen to the sound of the masses, how they're shouting. Marching and singing, tear gas stay in my eyes. But what happens when somebody feels they're running out of time? I think that train should have been here by now. I wanna know, when will we overcome? Help me to. Come on and let us get the step into the place. Ain't nobody worried. We gotten tired of the smiles and the lies coming from their faces. We've been overcoming someday now. Seem like doggone near forever. We gonna change anything, it's now or never. I wanna know, when will we overcome?
Thank you so much. That was beautiful.
So yes, my name is Sharon Kim. I am a core member of OPAL. We are a progressive feminist organization, and we're building power for API women and non-binary folks in Ohio. And as it was said, I'm also the mother of two young children. My oldest child actually started first grade this year, and we are a Columbus City Schools family. All right, so let's get started. So my first racist experience happened when I was four. I was out shopping with my mom, and another kid pulled their eyes back at me. So you can imagine how it felt when I learned that my oldest son's first racist experience was identical to mine. He was also 4 years old, and a classmate pulled their eyes back at him. So, you know, I had a lot of thoughts and emotions surrounding this incident, obviously, but the one main thought that I want to bring to you today is this. Why is my child experiencing the same thing that happened to me 34 years ago? You know, for all of us who are gathered here, I'm making the assumption that we already know that we have to talk about these things with our kids, right? That we already know it's never too early to talk to them, that they're not too young to talk about this kind of stuff, that we have to talk about respecting differences in our cultures. But what I am wondering is, are you bringing some specificity to these conversations with your children? And I'm bringing up this challenge of intentionality here because I don't know if you know, but families that look like mine, we've been experiencing a huge increase in anti-Asian racism and violence since the beginning of the pandemic. From a 2020 report from Stop API Hate, this is a nonprofit group who reports on anti-Asian violence and racist incidents throughout the country. Of the youth that they interviewed and they surveyed, 80% of them reported verbal bullying or harassment mainly in a school environment. And keep in mind, 2020 is a year when the majority of our students were not even in the classroom. This was in virtual learning. So here, this year, all of us in the classroom, you can imagine the kind of fear, kind of anticipatory feeling of what's happening with our kids in the classroom right now. Additionally, the FBI put out a report that showed a 70% increase in reported hate crimes targeting people of Asian descent from 2020 as compared to 2019. And I think it's really important for me to mention here, it's not just AAPI communities who've been experiencing this increase in racist attacks, it's all BIPOC communities. That same FBI report also showed that Black people reported an increase in 40% of hate crimes in that same time period. And also keep in mind, these things are likely to be unreported. So what is not being reported, I mean, it has to be so much more than we actually know what's going on. So this is a challenge that I am bringing to all of you here today. It is an opportunity for us as parents and caretakers to really examine and identify those gaps in the conversations that we're having with our kids and to address them with specific examples. You know, you can ask yourself, have I explained to my child, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Thank you for being here and staying in the rain. I'll get through this quickly. So you can ask yourself, have I explained to my child why the gesture of pulling their eyes back is harmful, why it is racist, especially when you do it to someone who is of Asian descent? Have you explained why it's disrespectful and wrong to touch a Black person's hair? Do they understand why a character like Apu from The Simpsons is a harmful and racist stereotype? And are they able to recognize when a peer is having a racist incident happen to them and what they can do as a bystander to step in? You know, we have to think about when our kids were little and we were talking about color, right? You don't just say, this is the color blue, and then say, good luck to you, right? We actively engage with them about giving them examples, showing them in the real world, this is the color blue. This is how you can think about when you're talking with your kids about race and racism. This is also a reminder that I'm bringing to you that this is a collective community responsibility. The burden of the responsibility to address racism in our schools and communities, it should not be falling on the shoulders of our BIPOC families. And frankly, we can't do it by ourselves, okay? This is an opportunity for us to demonstrate to our children what solidarity with our community members looks like. This is an opportunity for us to demonstrate to our children what it means to be an ally to our friends and neighbors. Families like mine, we don't have a choice. We have to talk about the harsh realities and harm that comes from these racist incidents, whether we are ready for it or not, you know? And it happens when they're young, like my son when he was 4 years old. So I really am encouraging you to please face these hard and difficult conversations head on and to not avoid them because it's uncomfortable. I asked my son what has been the most helpful for him. Even though, since school has started, we've had 4 separate incidences from different peers where there was a racist gesture done towards him. But in his words, he feels great. He feels great. And he said there are 2 things. The first thing is because he knows how to speak up. He's not going to be quiet when these things happen to him. And the second thing is because he feels safe and supported by the adults who are in the classroom, by the adults who are in his school. My hope is that if you're having these intentional and specific conversations at home, that this will contribute to creating that kind of safety in our schools and our communities. We owe it to each other and we owe it to our kids to try and create that for them. A better world is possible, but we can only do it together. Thank you, everyone. I hope you didn't get too wet.
Thank you, Sharon. So, folks, we committed to doing this rain or shine, and it looks like the closest lightning strike is almost 90 miles away, so we're going to keep plugging along. We have one more scheduled speaker, but I'm sure there are a few of you out there who have been listening and think, I have things to say, so we are going to open it up for open mic after that. So if you're thinking about wanting to say something, this gives you a little bit of time. Go under.
Oh, this gives you a little bit of time to kind of, you know, get your words in order. So our final scheduled speaker is Dr. Pranav Jani from Worthington School of Parents, part of WRJO's leadership and a professor of English and director of the Asian American Studies program at The Ohio State University.
Thanks so much. Thanks to all the speakers. Thanks to all the performers, the folks who set up the art. I mean, how great is that, right? We really wanted to make this something where people can come together as a wider community. The other side always says it's the silent majority, the voice of the silent majority. I think that's absolutely wrong. I think we actually have the numbers, but we just need to come out more and come together more. So I'm glad this turned out as it did. I'm glad people came out in the rain, came prepared, clearly. So that's fantastic. What I want to do is talk about the question of diversity in relation to justice. I want to talk about how it's not enough to talk about diversity, but it has to bend towards justice. Because if we don't, diversity can very easily become a cloak for the status quo. And so we actually have to have an orientation. So I wore my Black Lives Matter shirt in order to remember that. We have to defend the ground of diversity. We have to defend the right to talk about diversity. The right wing has pulled back the discussion decades, right? Where we even have to talk about the importance of all of these topics in the schools, the importance of raising these issues in the schools. The right wing has kind of made it a discussion at a very low bar. But the Black Lives Matter movement has actually pushed the discussion in another way. The immigrants' rights movement has pushed the discussion in another way. The abortion rights movement have pushed the discussion in the other way. To say we can't just talk about diversity as a kind of variety, but we actually have to talk about social oppression. We actually have to talk about structures of oppression. We actually have to talk about something like justice, right? The Black Lives Matter movement is not just about diversity, but it's about defund the police, abolish the police. Inclusion means a person at a stop sign, stopped by a police, doesn't have to worry if they're going to die that day. Including the idea that safety for everyone and not just for some people means understanding that we might need to reshape our idea of what policing is, what safety is, what community is, and how we're going to make that happen is actually kind of difficult. And so I want to talk about that link between diversity can be the beginning of a conversation about justice, but it's not the same thing. I think a way to start talking about this is why we've shifted in our language from diversity to DEI. I think that's a way to start talking about it, right? Diversity isn't just about variety. When we bring in the DEI question, when we talk about equity, we're talking about something different now. We're not saying every child needs to have the same thing. We're saying every child needs to have whatever they need to make them succeed. And that means understanding historical oppression. That means understanding social oppression. That means understanding children are coming from very different places. So the equity part is really crucial. And it allows us to look beyond simply a surface level question of diversity, of let's have more variety. I think inclusion is also very important. It makes us think beyond not just, you know, beyond the communities we imagine when we think about who needs to come together. For example, if we talk about religious unity, and if what comes to mind is the Methodists, Presbyterians, and Catholics need to come together, what about Muslims? What about Buddhists, right? Are we thinking beyond our necessary day-to-day experience? And so DEI is a way to start getting there, to start having a wider understanding of diversity. But unfortunately, just calling it DEI isn't enough. Where I work at Ohio State is a great example. In the wake of the summer 2020 uprisings, we had a lot more money for racial justice work, for hiring a much more diverse faculty, etc. At the same time, the minute issues of crime and safety came up on campus, right? You saw last week, $20 million for the police, right? To kind of make things safer. So the two things are existing at the same time. We have DEI, and we have pretty much saying to the Black Lives Matter movement, no, we actually don't think we need to rethink policing. We're going to put a whole bunch more money into it, right? So this is the kind of society we're in right now, where you can talk about diversity and also do something that doesn't pay attention to the very movement that got us talking about this in the first place, right? So that's the kind of situation we're in right now, and we have to challenge that, right? We talk about voting. It's absolutely crucial. But did you see what happened with the border police and the Haitians,
right?
Yep. Under Biden? Yep. It's not just about talking about it. It's about actually asking, why do we have this kind of system that treats Haitians in this way? You know, and how does that actually stop, right? And so we have to vote. We have to do those things. We have to engage. But it's not just about those phrases. It's about the actual changes taking on the systems of oppression that we're facing. I think another problem we have, another thing we have to work through, and it's right around these elections for school boards. How is DEI connected to the issue of police in schools? How is DEI connected to the issue of SROs? These are debates we're going to have in our community. There may be debates right here. People have come together to celebrate diversity, absolutely. But maybe you're not sure about the SRO issue. Maybe you're not sure about the policing issue. And those are discussions we're going to have, right? As I said before, I think the policing issue is intimately connected with the question of diversity and the question of structural change. Because we can't let a kid who's affected by some disciplinary issue, we can't let that turn into a law enforcement issue, a crime issue, a legal issue that can put Black children, other children of color, disabled children, et cetera, in a much more difficult situation. So those are the difficult conversations we're going to have. This coming school board election is actually kind of a referendum on the question. We actually have somebody running who has an interest in having police in schools and wants to actually bring, you know, overturn that policy. So this is something to think about, to ask hard questions about, and to think for ourselves, what do we mean by diversity? What do we mean by DEI? How far are we going to connect it to justice? And I'll take your time and just say one last thing. The other side also calls us racist, right? People have said it before. They take Martin Luther King. They take I Have a Dream. The same quote all the time. The content of the character, not the color of our skin, right? They take the same quote every time, and they throw it back, and they claim that Martin Luther King is on the side, right, of opposing DEI, et cetera. And so first of all, we have to say, don't you know, take King out of your mouth. I think that's the first thing we have to say. But second thing we have to say, did you actually read the speech? Because for Martin Luther King, he dreams about a world in which the content of the character, not the color of the skin, determines. I mean, who shouldn't dream about? We all should dream about that kind of world. But he doesn't do it by pretending racism doesn't exist. He talks about taking on structural inequality. You should read the speech. But he pretty much says in 1963, we're here 100 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. There was a promissory note that was given that all men are created equal. We went to cash the check and it bounced. We went to cash the check and it bounced. 100 years after Emancipation Proclamation, he says, look at the situation of the Black community and we're in bad shape. We didn't get that promise of equality. And that's why we need to keep fighting. That's the main part of his speech. After that, he says, I dream of a different world. And so we have to keep our feet on the ground of reality and we have to dream about a different world at the same time. Not act like pretending all this stuff doesn't exist is how we start dreaming. So keep fighting. Thanks for coming out. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. And so another speaker is reminding us that...
That was audio from a recent protest in support of the Worthington School Board's proposed diversity and inclusion policies. That audio was produced by Rob Ebright of WCRS. And this has been Conscious Voices, heard each week at this time on your community radio station, WCRSLP 92.7 and 98.3 FM, and on WGRNLP 94.1 FM in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis, and I'll see you again next week for another edition. Take care. The program you are listening to is broadcast both on community radio station WCRS via translator W245AY at 98.3 FM and on WGRN 94.1 FM. WCRSFM.org and WGRN.org. If you like what you're hearing or want to get involved, please visit those websites and give what you can. Both stations are non-commercial and volunteer-run. Both stations depend on listener support. Again, the websites are WCRSFM.org for WCRS and WGRN.org for WGRN.